Support for 30 Days of West Virginia Music is provided by Kinship Goods, proud supporter of DIY music and the arts. Locally shipped worldwide at kinshipgoods.com.
All art comes from the heart, comes from the soul. A lot of times the more struggle you have in life, you know, the deeper the well is. And people in West Virginia have they have a lot of stories to tell, and they have a lot of things that they've gone through and a lot of struggles that we face that other states won't face. And so to think that there wouldn't be amazing music in West Virginia is kind of short-sighted. I think that West Virginia is a place where you would expect real great music to come out of.
I'm Joni Deutsch, and this is 30 Days of West Virginia Music, a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and A Change of Tune. Throughout the month of June, we are celebrating some of the folks who are making the West Virginia music scene wild and wonderful. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews. And today, a folk fusion band out of Charleston who command the stage with Appalachian rock interviews. And today, a folk fusion band out of Charleston who command the stage with Appalachian rock, old-time jazz, and even a few theatrics. This is The Company Stores. Do you guys want to go ahead and tell me who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm Casey Litz, and I'm the vocalist for The Company Stores.
I'm Matt Marks, and I play the guitar for The Company Stores.
So how did you guys begin playing together as The Company Stores?
Pies and Pints in Charleston. I started working there in, what was it, 2012, summer of 2012. And then Casey started, like, the end of the summer? I mean, it was like a couple months after I started. And we were just, it was a slow day shift, and we were just talking about music. And she said that she wrote some songs and played open mics and stuff like that. I told her that I'd been writing music for a while, and we just decided to get together. She came over to my house and started singing, and I was like, yeah, we should start a band as soon as I heard her voice.
And before that, you know, I had been like playing out open mics by myself, and I'd really been looking for a guitar player. And that day at Pies and Pints, I was talking to one of my tables about how I played music, and they were like, oh, you know, like one of your other employees, you know, he plays music too. And I was like,
really? Yeah. A table told you that? I didn't
and
even
I was like,
know
wow.
that.
So then,
So it's really you guys got together because some customer is like, yeah, you know. Yeah.
And that's weird too, because I never played out in Charleston before we played. So that's odd that some random customer knew that I played guitar.
I guess it's they just had that intuition. They were like who's the guy that managed the Beatles?
The calluses on the fingers.
Yeah.
Dead giveaway. Yeah.
No, probably not. Probably just had random luck to know that you guys were able to play together.
Yeah.
But you guys had known each other prior to that.
No, not at all.
We met at Pies and Pints.
Wow.
Yeah. Everyone else in so John Query, the drummer, he worked at Pies and Pints and you know, there was kind of like there still is, there's a new crew now, I guess. But, I mean, to me, like when we first started, there was this solid crew of workers at Pies and Pints, and everybody kind of went out and were really involved in the music scene and things. And so whenever he came out and we played like our first open mic, he came up to us afterwards and was like, I have to start playing with you guys. So he brought on Joe Ceballos, who is our fiddle player. Then we met Matt Jackford through John also, and they all went to GW together, and they all graduated the same year. Casey was a couple years later.
Yeah.
So, but she knew, I mean, she had known John and...
Yeah, I knew who they were, but I was never, like, I never really knew them in high school because I was a little bit younger.
And Casey,
so we met later.
Had you ever performed around the area prior to joining up with Matt and doing, like, the Company Stores?
No, I mean, really, before I met Matt, I was playing maybe, like, less than a year, like, doing some open mics. Like, I always wanted to sing, and I was learning guitar at the time.
How was it growing up in Charleston around the music? Did you guys go out ever to, like, see music, whether it was, like, at the Clay Center or the Empty Glass?
I never really did. I grew up in Lincoln County.
Okay.
But I went to GW, so I spent a lot of, like, evenings, like, out at a farm, you know, in the middle of nowhere. we were allowed to do like one thing on the weekends because it was too much driving. But I never really was that like interested in music in high school.
Yeah.
It kind of came like later on.
So really the thing that pushed you all to get into performing together as a band was obviously that one customer that just knew.
Yeah, yeah. That one guy. We need to find him. And
no, I know who it is.
Name an album off of him.
It was actually my 11th grade history teacher.
At GW?
Yeah.
Who was it?
Oh, what's her name?
I probably had her.
We'll be able to figure this out.
I'm sure I'll remember it as soon as I walk out of this building.
Joe will know. Joe knows the whole staff at GW.
Miss Hannah. Oh, Hannah. she was there when I was there too.
It was her and her husband that I was waiting on. And she
Know these people. Yeah. Can they,
I think maybe they, like, mentioned to them, or I don't know.
Maybe they were like regulars at Pies or something, and I had told them that I played guitar or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up playing music, but I didn't play guitar. I was always interested in music. My dad was a pastor, so I was always involved in like church music, and I was really interested in drums whenever I was a kid. So I started playing drums at 5, and played drums until I was probably about 8 or 9, and then I got bored with that, and then wanted to play the violin, and that didn't stick. And I gave up on that, and then started playing guitar when I was about 14.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
That actually stuck.
Yeah. I didn't change anything else.
What did you guys like listening to when you were younger?
I listened to, like, a lot of, like, musicals. I know that's weird.
No. Yeah. I mean, because you have a theatrical kind of voice now.
By, like, what my parents listened to and stuff like that. It was kind of all over the board, really. But I also played, like, first through sixth grade, I played, like, piano and saxophone. And once I, like, started middle school, my parents were like, okay, well, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. And I was like, screw you guys. Like, I'm not playing music anymore.
So they were saying that to say, like, you can just put it down and focus on something more that you're better at.
Yeah, if you're not really interested.
Oh, honey, it's okay. You don't have to do it for us.
It's all right.
But now they're what, really big fans of yours now that you're...
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
they should
fans.
Be.
They kind of have to be.
Cheers to all the things unsaid. Curdled milk and moldy bread. Many paths we've walked, not all of them in stride. Crows swing low around the bend. Feet are dry, our mouths are fed. Take my hands and we can make it through the night. Shine your little light. Shine your little light.
So your second release is out now. It's called Little Lights. What is this record all about?
You want me to say?
Yeah. You wrote a lot of it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to kind of incorporate everything from the record into, you know, one direct message. But, I mean, it touches on a lot of different things. You know, of course, like, you know, like all albums do. But Little Lights, which is the title track, is about my best friend who passed away in 2016. He committed suicide. And it's kind of a realization that I came to after that happened, and going through the mourning process and everything with friends. And it was something that I realized to where, you know, Brian was his name, and that even though he was gone physically, there are certain parts of him that are completely ingrained into my personality. There are things that I say, like, you know, phrases that I'll say that were I got from him, and things that I do, and, you know, and that's the way that, especially, one of my favorite authors is Stephen King, and if you read a lot of his books, it talks about how kids growing up, how much, like, that tight unit, like, it's hard to break, you know, and whenever they get older, they still have that connection, and so, for me, it was kind of like I could look at my friends and just hanging out with them during that whole process. I could just see him in all of us. And so in a way, that part of him is never going to die. And that part of him will be passed on to other people. Everybody that we come into contact with, we can affect,
you know, in a certain way. And the more time you spend with somebody, the more you affect them. And so, like, you know, Casey knew Brian before she even met him through me, you know. And then I don't know if she, but it's possible that she could have, like, picked up on things that I said or whatever before she even met him. And there's like, oh, that's where that came from, you know. And so Little Lights is kind of a thing to where, like, I have a habit of taking old gospel tunes, I guess, from being a preacher's kid. But I took this Little Light of Mine hymn and kind of incorporated that into, you know, our light, our being has an effect. It has an energy that we put out, and we affect everybody that we touch. And, you know, and that goes on. Even after we're gone physically, that energy is still being put out there.
Yeah, it's never going to die.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of like what that song is about, that, you know, we can affect people positively or negatively, and how much we choose our light to shine, or how much energy we choose to put out there into the world. We can hide it, we can, you know, whatever else, but is kind of how we define ourselves.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to hear that, you know, you lost your friend, and but at least it sounds like this was a good way both for you all as a band to come together and do something really great, but then also honor his memory. I know you had a release show at the Clay Center for the record a while ago. Do you know if his family was there? Or if
they were, okay. Yeah, and they came to Mountain Stage also.
To see you guys perform on
yeah,
it, yeah.
Yeah, his mom became like our new favorite fan. Mm.
That's great.
Yeah, but I mean, and
I feel like Matt, like this past year, like he's written a lot of songs on this album, and he's gone through like so much change. And I'm grateful that he's able to take all that's going on and put it into this outlet that's like writing and creating music. Because I think it's really healthy. And it's once you hear his stories and then you hear our songs, I think it's inspiring.
Yeah. Well, with the album release that happened at the Clay Center a while back, you guys had lights, you had like a backing choir, you had dancers on the side of the stage that were looping around hula hoops with little lights in them. It really was like not just a feast of sound, but like a feast of all kinds of activity and eye-catching things. Is that something that you're wanting to do on the road when you're going out, where there's all these little components and it's almost like a festival or like this big old party?
Well, I mean, we're not to that point yet to where we can just bring full production every time. Luckily with our album release, you know, the Clay Center provides stuff and we provided some extra lighting. And for that show specifically, I mean, we've been working on the album for, you know, over a year, and we just kind of wanted to just let loose and like, you know, have everybody have a good time and that kind of thing. And that's why we wanted to create that type of show.
Also I feel like with our shows now, like bigger shows like the Clay Center, and, you know, we have a Live on the Levee show coming up. We're starting to think about it more, not like just a show, but a performance.
As a spectacle.
You know, yeah. Like, how can we like outdo ourselves like what we did last time?
That's the main thing is we get bored.
We come up with
ADD.
Some like super crazy ideas.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like Matt does. Yeah. And then we have to bring him back down to earth.
Yeah.
What ideas do you have moving forward? What are things like that were left on the drawing board for the last one?
So there are some things many things that have gotten cut. One was involving a horse-drawn chariot.
Really?
You
mean
yeah.
like bringing the band into the venue?
Just Casey. Yeah,
oh, okay.
On the chariot, you
wow.
know, looking like the Mockingjay, you
oh,
know,
wow.
like with a dress on fire kind of thing, you know, but
we
with
like,
a literal
maybe,
dress on fire.
Fire.
Right. But no, I mean, yeah, I mean, it depends on the show. But I mean, a lot of times, and this is one thing I was thinking about the other day is, you know, we like to think of ourselves, I mean, I guess, as somewhat serious musicians, you know, and we treat our music as an art form, and we want it to be looked at that way. But at the same time, whenever you're playing live and you're performing, I think too many musicians get caught up in their own hype and they just want to be super serious the whole time instead of like realizing that, I mean, a lot of these, I mean, especially for a show like The Levee or something like that, a lot of these people haven't heard your music, and not only as musicians, you're also entertainers.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, you might have great music, but if people didn't walk away and just said, man, that was an awesome time, you have to look at each show and decide what you're going to do. I mean, we're going on tour here in June, and there's some shows where we're just going to play acoustically and, you know, just be really kind of intimate. And there's some songs where we're, or some shows where we're going to bring the noise and the party kind of thing. It just depends on, you know, where you're at. And so we do a really good job about gauging each show and like trying to feel out the crowd and, you know, just trying to make sure that the crowd stays engaged.
Well, with the Mountain Stage performance you had, which was last February, and it had, like, you know, these big old names like Margo Price, you guys, you didn't have too much of a spectacle. Of course, it is a radio program, so no one will ever really see it on NPR stations. But it still was a good performance. Do you guys want to talk about that performance and what that meant to the band by being on this West Virginia, you know, national program?
Yeah, I mean, it was, like, for me, it was one of the points I will remember for the rest of my life. And I was also so nervous. Like, we've played hundreds of shows, but this was, like, a different kind of show, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool to see, like, everything that went into, like, the production of Mountain Stage. For me, like, Mountain Stage has been one of my, like, all-time inspirations for why I wanted to start playing music. You know, I went to a show with my dad, and I remember, like, sitting in the audience, looking up there and thinking, like, oh my God, like, I want to do that. I can do that. I'm going to do that. So yeah, I think it was just a big, big moment for us.
It was really short.
You mean it just went by so quickly?
Yeah, it went by so quick, and I was just like, we were on our last song, and I was like, man, like,
it's like we're just getting
and I was trying to savor it as much as I could, and at the same time perform, and, you know, and so on Silence, which was our last song, you know, it's a more low-key song, so I was just trying to, like, soak everything in for that last song. But yeah, I mean, I wish we could have played for
hours.
Yeah,
you guys had, what, about 20 minutes? So you played, like, four or five songs.
Four songs.
Well, you guys sounded great, though, and people were yelling from the audience for you guys compared to Margo Price or anyone else.
They started yelling while Larry was talking.
Yeah.
And I was like, just wait. Yeah.
Well, that's something I enjoy seeing, is a West Virginia band getting on stage and being able to bring a crowd, but also bring the same level of professionalism and musicality as any of the national acts up there. It's really heartwarming. So I'm sure people felt the same.
Yeah, thank you.
So speaking of West Virginia music scene, you know, you guys have been around for a while. What is it about the West Virginia music scene that makes you feel like this is where the company stores belong?
I mean,
beyond the fact that the name does harken back to, like, company stores and coal mining.
I mean,
I think this is where the band is supposed to be for now, definitely. I think it, playing in Charleston and being from here has kept us very grounded and humble. I think it's a great place to, like, how we have all learned our craft. But personally, I think that we're kind of ready to, like, spread our wings and, like, get out there. Yeah.
You mean,
yeah,
like, get out there in the sense of, like, touring more? Or you mean getting out of state, like, actually relocating to another part?
I think both.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's not a bad thing. Yeah. I mean, well, talk about that a little bit more. What do you guys think about moving forward?
Well, I mean, we definitely don't want to plateau. I mean, nobody ever wants to plateau in their life. So we are touring a lot more. Like I said, we have a tour in June. We're hitting Lexington, Nashville, New Orleans, Tampa. So we're doing kind of a big Southeast tour. And then the next one, who knows, maybe Northeast. But we're going to try and keep expanding our radius. And in that time period, I mean, there's been some talk about relocating. It's possible that some members might, you know, and some members might stay. But, you know, we're just going to try and figure out what's, you know, I mean, it's the fine line of, like, hey, this is what's right for me and this is what's right for the band kind of thing, you know. So as far as moving forward, we always want to keep climbing.
And you got to put yourself out there, too.
No.
You know, like, almost we're, like, we all work Monday through Friday usually, and then we're off playing somewhere new, hopefully somewhere new every weekend.
Yeah.
That's a good goal to have. You know, I know some bands that stay in a certain city or they stay in a certain region and they don't go beyond that, which, you know, you could be the best talent and people might be able to find you in this little area of West Virginia from across the world. But I think it does help, though, by going to the other areas outside of West Virginia or the region, just because getting in front of their face and showing them what you can do.
I think that's really good for West Virginia and for the West Virginia music scene. I mean,
because we played the Orange Peel in Asheville, which is this great venue. I mean, like, tons of acts have come through there for the past 30 years since they've been a larger venue, and it's kind of become this iconic Asheville thing. And so we played there last December, and there were five bands, and we were the second band on the lineup, and we came out and played, and when we came off stage, the promoter was like, he threw out a bunch of cuss words, like, in a good way. It was like I didn't know West Virginia had music like that.
Yeah,
I didn't know y'all had it like that in West Virginia. And you know, he was like, you guys, I wish I would have known. You guys are the best band. Like,
people are always here very tonight. Surprised that we're from West Virginia.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's a lot of talent.
Yeah, we actually have, you know.
Surprisingly,
There's shoes, too, and, you know.
Teeth.
Like,
hygiene.
Yeah.
The ability to, like, string along sentences.
Right.
Yeah. Well, with your genre, though, with hill hop, how did you decide upon hill hop? Like, what influences are from the hill? What influences are the hop?
Well, when I, like, first started writing songs, I first started writing, like, rap. So I would look up, like, instrumentals on YouTube and just try to write, like, little raps and whatnot.
Casey and then, always wants to rap. She's like, if there's some open space,
like,
she's like, she's like, we should throw rap in here. And like, I'm like, Casey, this is Nightingale. Like, this is a slow ballad.
Everything
we're not going to rap
like
in
a
this.
Little more like hip hop.
Right. Yeah.
You could do like a remix album where you take Little Lights and you make it into like the hip hop version of or the rap version of it.
I like that.
I'm sorry. I just brought that up. I just put that idea in my head.
No, like, but I mean, I think that, you know, we are such an eclectic band that you could just take a word from every single genre and just kind of throw it in there. So it'd be like blue rock, hill hop, you know, like whatever else. Yeah. And
that term came to be though with our first album.
Rolling in from that song.
Yeah, it was
song,
our song
Rolling In.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is described as hill hop.
Yeah. And that's one of probably the only songs that really fits that bill,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's the age old, like, thing of like asking a musician what kind of music they play and then not having them say a paragraph.
Yeah.
You know? And so instead of just saying, oh, we're eclectic, we do this, 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 and this, we just kind of came up with something.
Let me tell you a story about a boy I knew before he was so good, so good, so good. Was just a girl when he found me till he turned my world. So good, so good, so good.
You talked a little bit about the potential of you all moving forward, whether that's moving out of state, moving a new record, moving different genres, whatever. What's been the one thing in the West Virginia music scene that you think would keep you here, that make you want to stay here longer, if anything?
I would say more places to play.
Yeah.
You know, being a band, there's only like a handful of places that we can play, and we can't overdo that. So we try to play here once every maybe 4 months. And I think what, you know, Charleston is definitely missing is like a venue that's bigger than just a bar.
Yeah.
You know, we
somewhere
really
between the Clay
that.
Center
yeah,
and a bar.
And something where like, you know, traveling bands can stop through. Yeah, I think that would do us a
like
lot of good.
Yeah, like a good mid-range music venue. That I mean, that has a bar, of course, but something like the Orange Peel, something with anywhere from a 5 to 1,000 capacity, something like that, to where good mid-range bands that would play like a mountain stage kind of thing mm-hmm. could come and do like a different kind of show, you know? And that's really something that Charleston needs. And as far as places that we play in West Virginia, you know, there's Charleston, there's Huntington, there's Morgantown.
Purple Fiddle
and Thomas.
The Purple
Fiddle and Thomas.
Yeah.
Beckley now has got Melodies, and I think they're doing some really good things. You know, there's all this great music. It's crazy, but I just feel like it's so sectional and sometimes so disorganized. And also, I mean, there's just not as many people in West Virginia to go see live music. I mean, it takes a certain type of person to want to, you know, stay up, you know,
Past one on a Thursday night,
you know, or whatever, and go see a band that starts at 10 or 9 o'clock or something, you know. So
there's just not as much of a need for venues. So that's why we have to expand. But I personally, I mean, I would love to keep Charleston our home base and just keep growing our radius, you know. But that's just me. I mean, like, I also see the benefit in going to another town and making some really good, you know, music connections in that town and things like that. So
yeah,
kind of up in the air for, you know, what exactly our next moves are going to be. I mean, we're already writing for the next album.
Oh, great.
Always writing for the next album. We have signed on with a music management company out of Asheville.
Cool.
So they helped set up a lot of this tour that we're going on and a lot of the shows. That is one thing that I'm really happy about. It's just the not just where we're playing, but what venues. We've kind of lucked out with this tour, and we're playing some of the best venues in cities where we've never played. That's the thing is, you know, the past 4 years we've been trying to get out there more so people can hear us, and then when the right ears hear you, you know, then it opens up more doors, and finally some of those doors are starting to be opened, and hopefully that will just open more. So predicting the future, you don't know what the next door is going to be, is kind of hard. I think the West Virginia music scene is, I mean, I being on the road for so long and seeing a lot of bands, and I would put some of Charleston's top bands up against Asheville's any day, you know. Mm-hmm. All art comes from the heart, comes from the soul. A lot of times the more struggle you have in life, you know, the deeper the well is. And people in West Virginia have, they have a lot of stories to tell, and they have a lot of things that they've gone through and a lot of struggles that we face that other states won't face. And so I think that to think that there wouldn't be amazing music in West Virginia is kind of short-sighted. I think that West Virginia is a place where you would expect real great music to come out of, as opposed to, like, you know, I wouldn't expect really deep music to come out of Beverly Hills, you know, I mean, for instance. So, you know, I mean, so
you never,
I mean,
know.
You never know, you never know. Yeah. But I mean, at the same time,
the housewife,
right? Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, so I think the Charleston music scene is great, and I like I said, I would put some of these bands up against any band that I've come across all over the nation.
That's high praise. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Obviously, you guys have a mascot, and you didn't bring him here today, but I've seen pictures of him. I've seen him live in person. Can you talk about him and why he is the band's mascot?
Sure. So his name is Mo Lassus, and he's a red gummy bear, and he has a part of his ear bitten off. And it just kind of symbolizes ear candy for the band, I guess. He's a southern gentleman.
He's also, what, like a foot tall?
Yeah.
Well, it depends when you catch him. I mean, he rises to the occasion. Yeah. Mo is just he is a symbol of how ridiculous we are as people and as a band. Mo came about when we first started playing together and we were practicing in John's basement. We were talking about doing a photo shoot, and we wound up doing the photo shoot, but
for our first album.
Yeah, and it was going to be this table full of candy, this candy feast, because we were thinking about naming the first album Ear Candy, actually.
Hmm.
That was John's idea, and it wound up not happening. Rolling In became, you know, the title track, but Mo was the centerpiece. If you look at the first album and you look at the pictures first album, Mo was the centerpiece, and our bassist at the time, Joey Legal, grabbed him and took a big bite out of his ear. And then,
which was what, like a 5-pound gummy bear?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't going to be anything really, like, as far as the album or whatever is concerned, but there was the shot that Crystal Castle, who's this photographer here in Charleston, who's great, and she did that photo shoot of him, like, he had fallen down on the table. His head was just resting on the table, and you could see that big bite out of his ear. And there was this great shot, and we were like, man, this might be the best shot of the whole entire thing. And and so that became the album cover. And then we just kind of took him with us and gave him some personality and whatever else. But Mo's kind of like the devil on our shoulder. You know, he's the one, that motivates us to...
get into trouble.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Take a bite out of life.
Yeah.
That's cute. Horrible. No, yeah, I like being able to spot him, especially when like John Query just like brings him out like on his like drum kit or mm-hmm. and he's like, "Oh, okay, there he is."
Yeah.
It's almost like, "Where's Waldo?"
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah, too. Where's Mo? If there's one story or one moment that symbolizes like what the company stores is to you all, what you want it to be, what's been that moment for you?
I feel like during every performance we have, I feel like there's a moment in each performance where I feel that. It depends on like if we're playing, if we're really like in the pocket or on point with a song. But yeah, I feel that way every time, you know, we play and we get on stage. I feel like that's where we're supposed to be and that's what we're supposed to be doing.
The company store's latest release is Little Lights. Find their tour schedule and check out their music on social media. 30 Days of West Virginia Music is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting and A Change of Tune. This episode was written, edited, and produced by me, Joni Deutsch. Our associate producer is Nathan Thomas. Our digital promotions come from Josh Saul. Our theme was composed by Matt Jackford and performed by Montana Skies and John Query. You can hear more West Virginia music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Follow us on social media. We're at A Change of Tune. And for more West Virginia music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/wvmusic and subscribe to our podcast feed. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.